Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for standing by. Welcome to Value Partners Group's 2018 Annual Results Conference Call. The call will begin with a presentation by management, followed by a Q&A section. I'd now like to hand over the call to Ms. Elizabeth Chung from Value Partners Investor Relations team.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Value Partners Group's 2018 Annual Results Conference Call. Please allow me to introduce the management team on the call this evening. We have our Chief Executive Officer, Dr. Oh Keen Loong, and Chief Financial Officer, I.C. Wang. Before we proceed, a quick reminder that this presentation contains statements that reflect the company's current beliefs and expectations about the future as of the respective dates indicated. These forward-looking statements are based on a number of assumptions about the company's operations and factors beyond the company's control, are subject to significant risks and uncertainties, and accordingly, actual circumstances may differ materially from those forward-looking statements. We have posted a set of slides to accompany this presentation on our corporate website. Please kindly reference the slides as this presentation proceeds. A replay of this call will also be available on our corporate website later on. I would now like to pass the call to I.C., who will discuss the group's financial highlights.
Thank you, Isabella. Good evening, everyone. Thank you for joining us. I would like to begin with an overview of our financial highlights, which is presented on slide four of our results presentation. Our profitability suffered in 2018 as one of the toughest market environments in recent history squeezed our earnings. We recorded 230 million Hong Kong dollars of profits attributable to owners of the company, down 89% compared to what it was in 2017, which was the most profitable year in history for Value Partners. Operating profits declined by 82% to 400 million Hong Kong dollars. The drop in profits was driven by a steep decline in performance fees, as most of our funds that attract performance fees finished the year below their high water marks. Gross performance fee for 2018 fell 98% compared to a year ago to 56 million Hong Kong dollars. However, we continue to see healthy growth in management fees as average AUM increased. Gross management fees rose 13% in 2018 to 1.3 billion Hong Kong dollars. The rise was against a 9% increase in average AUM for the year. Our annualized gross management fee margin increased to 103 basis points from 99 basis points in 2017. The stronger gross management fee margin was mainly driven by strong net flows into our flagship fixed income fund, which has relatively higher margins. Our annualized net management fee margin remains steady at 59 basis points. Now looking at slide five, the group finished 2018 with assets under management of $15 billion, which decreased from $16.6 billion that we had at the end of 2017. The decrease in AUM was due to a performance-driven decline of $2.1 billion, as most of our funds suffered negative returns amid the tough market environment. However, despite the challenging conditions, we saw a sizable net inflow of $1.2 billion in 2018 on the back of strong flows into our Greater China High Yield Income Fund and the growth of our China business. It's a notable reversal on the $278 million net outflow that we saw in 2017. It's also a notable contrast against the industry landscape. According to data from the Hong Kong Investment Funds Association, equity funds in Hong Kong suffered an industry-wide retail net outflow of $2.4 billion in 2018, while fixed income funds suffered an even greater $5.8 billion. While our own brand equity funds continued to see a net outflow in 2018, the magnitude of the outflow was considerably lower than what we have in 2017. Now please turn to slide six for a breakdown of our AUM. The strong net inflows into our Greater China High Yield Income Fund continue to lift the share of AUM accounted for by fixed income funds, which increased to 36% as of the end of 2018 from 30% a year ago. However, absolute return long bias equity funds continue to be our largest strategy, accounting for 62% of total AUM, although the number is down from 68% a year earlier. The spread of AUM between our own brand funds and white label products stood at 72% and 28% as of the end of 2018. While our own brand funds attract solid net inflows, the AUM of our white label and co-brand funds grew at a fast pace as we won new mandates and saw strong inflows into our existing accounts on the mainland of China. Geographically, Hong Kong continued to be our largest segment, contributing 78% of AUM at the end of 2018. However, the number is down from 80% a year ago as Singapore and China continue to gain ground. Singapore and China now contribute 7% each of the group's overall AUM. Among different fund investor types, institutional clients, which comprise of institutions, pension funds, high net worth individuals, endowments and foundations, funds of funds and family office and trusts, remained the group's primary investor group, accounting for 63% of AUM and up from 61% a year ago. Now looking at our cost structure on slide 7, our total expense decreased 51% compared to a year ago to 535 million Hong Kong dollars. The decrease was mainly underpinned by a decline in other compensation and benefits, which is mainly comprised of the discretionary management bonus. Our fixed expense rose 16% compared to a year ago, which is a somewhat faster pace compared to the 9% increase in our net management fees. As such, our fixed cost coverage ratio, which is defined as net management fees divided by fixed expense, dipped slightly to 2.2 times in 2018 compared to 2.3 times a year ago. The group aims to maintain a fixed cost coverage ratio of 2 times for any given year to ensure fixed costs are adequately covered by net management fees, which are a relatively stable source of income. We will continue to adopt a cautious approach to costs by cutting non-essential spending and seeking lower cost but potentially higher impact alternatives. However, we will prudently manage our resources to ensure that we strike an important balance between achieving cost control targets and investing sufficiently in our future growth. Please turn to slide 8. In light of the group's full-year performance in 2018 and capital requirements for future growth opportunities, a final dividend of 6 Hong Kong cents has been declared and is subject to shareholders' approval at the annual general meeting. The final dividend for 2018 equates to 34% of the group's realized profits, which excludes unrealized gain or losses recognized. Looking at our financial position on slide 9, the group had 1.6 billion Hong Kong dollars of cash and equivalents on its balance sheets as of the end of 2018, compared to 2.2 billion Hong Kong dollars a year ago. The lower cash position was mainly due to an increase in net investments, which rose from 1.8 billion Hong Kong dollars at the end of 2017 to 2.3 billion Hong Kong dollars at the end of 2018. To enhance the yield on our cash, we invested in around 600 million Hong Kong dollars of short-term debt securities in the first half of 2018. The securities have remained in tenors of less than a year. Now, I would like to hand the call over to Ken, who will present a review of the group's business.
Thank you, Icy. Good evening, everyone. 2018 was one of the most challenging years in recent history for Value Partners. The performance of our funds suffered as fears about the U.S.-China trade war, rising U.S. interest rates, and a slowdown in global economic growth ravaged investor sentiment. But despite the squeeze that this harsh environment had on our top line, we are pleased to share that we continued to make exciting progress in growing and transforming our business in 2018 as our ongoing efforts yield promising results. Highlights as shown on slide 11 include the establishment of our domestic private equity business in Shenzhen and the subsequent formation of our inaugural private equity fund on the mainland of China. Our domestic private fund business is also ramping up strongly. We have launched 4 domestic private investment security funds since winning a private fund management license in November 2017. The number is one of the highest among the 16 foreign asset managers that currently hold the license. On the cross-border business front, our flagship classic fund has recently won northbound approval for the mutual recognition of funds program. Globally, we have continued to bolster our footprint. In October, we opened an office in Kuala Lumpur to further strengthen our presence in Southeast Asia. Our Boston office also opened around the same time to serve as an on-the-ground distribution hub for North America as China becomes an increasingly important investment destination for investors in the region. On the other side of the Atlantic, our London office continues to make good progress. Beyond our more established markets, we have been identifying and capturing new opportunities in Japan, North Asia, and the Middle East. In addition to our initiatives to grow in China and globally, we have also been broadening our product suite. As part of our efforts to expand and transform our business, now that we have completed most of the groundwork for building our fixed income product suite, we are focusing on alternatives as the next major phase of our product suite expansion and have developed a strong pipeline of funds for launch in 2019. As IC highlighted earlier, the Value Partners brand also proved its mettle as we finished 2018 with a sizable net inflow into our funds and products. I will now go into a more detailed discussion of the progress that we have made in broadening our product suite, growing our China business, and expanding our global footprint. Firstly, I would like to share an update on our efforts to build our alternatives capabilities and products, which is highlighted on slide 12. Alternatives represent an important addition to our product suite, as it will not only help to enforce our margins, also offer diversification benefits, given performance and flows for alternatives tend to have low correlations with those of traditional asset classes. Importantly, alternatives also offer a new frontier of growth. According to recent industry data, global alternatives AUM is expected to increase 59% from 2017 to 2023, with the bulk of that growth set to be contributed by the Asia-Pacific and North America regions. At the same time, fund investors globally are becoming increasingly drawn to the ripening ecosystem of private market investment opportunities in China and Asia emerging markets. Over the past year, we made significant inroads in growing our alternatives investment capabilities, which cover private equity, private debt, and real estate. In private equity, we expect to launch our first fund on the mainland of China in the coming weeks, established under China's qualified foreign limited partnership program. The fund will invest in China's private higher education sector and will be co-managed by Hong Kong-listed China Education Group. The fund has a target AUM of 5 billion renminbi, and fundraising has been very encouraging so far, with a number of major mainland Chinese financial institutions and overseas investors having already made sizable commitments. In private debt, we launched our inaugural fund, an Asia-focused private debt fund, in January of this year with $75 million of committed capital. At the final closing, we aim to raise $550 million for the fund. In real estate private equity, we will soon be launching a new fund that will be marketed to external investors. The fund will adopt the same Asia-Pacific Core Plus strategy as the existing fund that we launched in June 2017. Our existing fund has built a strong performance track record, having achieved an IRR above our initial target as of end of 2018. In addition to alternatives, we have also developed a number of thematic products over the past year. We recently launched an Asian Innovation Opportunity Fund that invests in sectors benefiting from technological innovation in Asia and is geared towards retail investors in Hong Kong. In the quantitative investment space, we are preparing a thematic ETF product that capitalizes on the growth of China's Greater Bay Area. I will now proceed to slide 13 to discuss the breakthroughs and growth that our China business has seen over the past years. Our business on the mainland of China continued to gather speed last year. AUM attributed to our China business increased by more than 28% during 2018 to finish the year at $1.1 billion. The growth was mainly underpinned by the winning of new mandates, strong flows into existing accounts, and successful launches of private investment security funds. We also further broadened the scope of our business on the mainland of China, which now extends to the retail client segment after our flagship Classic Fund received approval for the Mutual Recognition of Funds scheme. We will be distributing our Classic Fund on the mainland of China through major channels, including banks, insurers, brokers, and online platforms, by our master agent, Tianhong Asset Management. The MRF scheme allows us to raise up to 50% of the overall AUM of our Classic Fund for mainland Chinese retail investors through a new renminbi share class that will have the same fee structure as existing share classes. We have also applied for our high dividend stocks fund to join the MRF scheme and hope to obtain approval in the near future. Value Partners has now launched 4 private investment security funds under our own brand in the domestic Chinese market. All 4 funds are ramping up well, and we plan to further expand the range and scope of our offerings in China's domestic private funds market in the coming year. Another major milestone was the establishment of our domestic private equity platform in Shenzhen in January 2018. With this qualified foreign limited partnership license, the platform will be able to raise capital both offshore and onshore to invest in domestic private equity projects, as in the case with our China education-focused private equity fund mentioned earlier. Please turn to slide 14. I'm pleased to share that 2 years after establishing our London office, we have made good progress growing our business in Europe. In 2018, we saw solid inflows into the suite of our own branded products that we are distributing through the UCITS platform. We also expanded the range of UCITS compliant funds on offer with the addition of an Asia ex Japan equity fund in September. In the institutional mandate space, we achieved a major breakthrough that is meaningful in not only its potential AUM contribution, but also its affirmation of our standing as a China investment expert. Additionally, our UK subsidiary has received approval from the Financial Conduct Authority to provide regulated products and services in the UK. We welcomed our first US-based colleague in the second half of 2018 as we geared up to open our Boston office. The office will serve as our North America distribution hub and will initially target institutional and professional investors. An exciting development in recent weeks has been MSCI's decision to increase the inclusion factor for A shares in its emerging market index from 5% to 20% by November 2019. We expect this to further boost rising demand from overseas institutional investors for quality managers with strong A share track records. Closer to home, we have deepened and streamlined our presence in Southeast Asia with the opening of our Malaysia office last October. The office serves as our hub for distribution, product development, and investment management in Southeast Asia. Our Singapore office will continue to act as a client servicing center for institutional and private banking clients, as well as a research outpost in the region. Malaysia is an important strategic market for Value Partners, given the brand visibility and strong business network that we already enjoy in that country. Our Malaysia office will also provide a base for us to develop new product classes, including Sharia-compliant products. Beyond our more established markets, we are seeing strong investor interest in our product in the Middle East and North Asia. In Japan, we inked a strategic partnership with Daiwa Securities Group last October, and we'll be collaborating closely with the financial service giant to develop and distribute China-focused products for the Japanese market. Finally, in Taiwan, we have recorded inflows into our equity funds from major institutional clients and are planning a number of distribution partnerships. As we look ahead to 2019, we are prepared for what could be another bumpy year as major macroeconomic risks continue to linger, although the outlook has noticeably brightened in recent months. Our AUM has rebounded to $16.1 billion as of the end of January, while the performance of our key funds have rebounded considerably since the beginning of the year. As IC discussed earlier, we will prudently manage our resources to ensure that we strike an important balance between achieving cost control targets and investing sufficiently in our future growth. Value Partners is well situated to capture opportunities stemming from China's rise as an asset management market and investment destination. We're excited about the future possibilities as we strengthen our distribution capabilities and grow our product suite to better position ourselves. We are also pleased to share the news of the appointment of our Deputy Chairman and Co-Chief Investment Officer, Mr. Louis Hsu, as Co-Chairman of the Board, and the redesignation of our Chairman and Co-Chief Investment Officer, Datuk Siri Jiaqinghai, as Co-Chairman. The redesignation and appointment is conditional upon certain amendments to the articles of association of the group being approved by shareholders at our annual general meeting in April, and is part of a succession planning process over the past few years to ensure the continuity of strong business stewardship. Datuk Siri Jiaqinghai will continue to play an active role in steering the group's overall business and investment strategies, while Louis will work closely with Datuk Siri Jiaqinghai on all aspects of providing leadership to Value Partners. It is expected that the collaboration between Datuk Siri Jiaqinghai and Louis will bring about more growth potential and facilitate the group's transformation from a regional player to a world-class asset management group. To all of our shareholders, clients, and colleagues, I would like to thank you for your support amid what was one of the most challenging market environments in recent history, and look forward to your continued support as we continue to grow our company. That concludes our results presentation. Thank you, everyone. Operator, please proceed to the Q&A session. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we are now open the floor for questions. If you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel the questions, please press star 2. The first question is come from James Huang from JP Morgan Taipei. And James, please go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for the presentation. I have three questions here. First one is, if we look at the fund inflow in 2018, could you give us a rough breakdown? How much is the inflow mainly solely to the Greater China High Yield Income Fund? And then how much is contributed by you the new funds that you launched last year? And then what's the trend that you've been observing year to date? In terms of the fund inflow, outflow. Second question is in terms of the product strategy, I think there have been quite few initiatives that's going on. But in terms of when we look at the breakdown of your products, I think the fixed income fund continue to increase. On the positive side, I think the fixed income fund has a higher management fees, but no performance fees. So I think maybe from a more medium to longer term perspective, if we look at your product breakdown, what's the likely or the optimal mix that you want to achieve compared to your product mix nowadays? And the third question is more the accounting one. I think you have granted a new share option fourth quarter last year. So just want to get a sense how the share-based expenses could increase from 27 million in 2018 to what level in 2019? Thanks.
Hello, James. This is IC. Thanks for your questions. So regarding your first questions about the breakdown of the $1.2 billion of net inflow that we record to 2018, unfortunately, we did not disclose by product or by strategy. But having said that, if you refer to slide 6 of the presentation slide, we share that actually, the fixed income fund, the proportion has actually increased from 30% to 36%. So you're right that actually the $1.2 billion US dollar majority of the fund flows actually goes to the fixed income fund, as we saw investors are still chasing for high yield products. But then compared to the Hong Kong IFA data, actually we did significantly better as an industry-wide actually record a large outflow from the fixed income side. And then other than that, we also shared previously that our China business has also started to grow momentum. So we also record a significant inflow in 2018 into our China mandate. And then perhaps I will jump to question three first before I passing on to King on question two. So for the share option, yes, this year we record a accounting expense on the share option of 27 million. But then actually in the subsequent years, there won't be a significant impact as most of a large batch of the share option actually amortized in year 2018. And again, to further emphasize that this is a zero cash impact, non-cash flow impact accounting expense. If we strip that expense out, there is no impact on the expense side and on the cash position. And then on number two, on the new strategy, you mentioned that your questions is about our fixed income products versus our equity funds mix in the future. Actually, we do not have any hard targets, but then perhaps I'll pass on to King to share about our strategy to expand our alternative products as well. Yeah.
Thank you, James. Thanks for that good question. First of all, yeah, you're right that our fixed income portion of business has grown, but that's mainly driven by market demand. As you know, last year was a very volatile market, and a lot of the investors became very defensive. But this year, we believe the sentiment will change, as we can expand a little bit more later regarding the MSCI Asia inclusion, because that will trigger not just global, but also domestic demand for Asia. In terms of our strategy, we have been expanding into the alternative space, mainly because we believe we can increase our profit margin through the alternative asset class, because they have higher management fee as well as the carry, as we all know. And that's why we have diversified into multiple strategies, starting with the real estate fund back in August 2017. And then we now have two fixed income alternative products, riding on the success of our Greater China High Yield strategy. One is a credit opportunity. Basically, it's a long-short credit strategy. And then we also have a private debt fund that we mentioned earlier in the presentation. We just had our first close, and we expect to raise in total $550 million U.S. dollar for that fund. And then the China Education Private Equity Fund is another initiative that we want to grow in the alternative space, and this time is a very targeted, specific strategy for mainland China. Because, as we know, the education sector has just been opened up recently, so the growth potential there is phenomenal. And this, in summary, is our product strategy going forward. We want to have a more balanced approach, so we would like to see a healthy exposure to fixed income, equity, but also alternative. So overall, we will have a balanced book of business, both in terms of product strategies as well as clientele, and most importantly, protecting our profit margin.
Yeah, that's very clear. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Ivy Liu from HSBC Hong Kong, and please go ahead.
Hi, management team. This is Livy from HSBC. And my main focus is more on the China AUM's rising trend. So do we have a breakdown for the free business in terms of private funds and private equity and MRF business in China AUM? If we don't have a specific number, can we know the largest contribution, where is it from? And the second one is the pricing strategy for these three business and also our advantage or disadvantage and solution compared to the local fund managers. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for that, Lucy. It's a great question. First of all, MRF, we just got the approval last December, so we're in the process of preparing for our first MRF fund launch, which is the Classic Fund. And the Classic Fund, as you know, we have performance fee. So this will also be part of the MRF fund feature in China. And this is a big advantage. And in terms of our PFM funds and also some of our advisory mandates, in China, we also charge performance fees. So the AUM growth that you've we mentioned is mainly from both the discretionary mandate as well as the PFM funds, because we are the first manager to have launched four PFM funds. We are in the process of working on fifth and sixth. In terms of our competitive advantage, I think there are two at least advantages I can think of. First of all, versus global managers who are trying to establish the PFM business in China, we were one of the very first foreign managers to have invested in China and established a presence in China. If I recall correctly, we first started investing in China back in 1998 and setting up our research team back in 2009. And so we already have established a very strong local presence, and this is definitely a competitive advantage over the newer comers into the China market, because I can proudly say that we are a local manager. But comparing ourselves to domestic players, we also have other advantages. That is, we have been adopting the best practice in the market, following international standard, both in terms of our operation and risk management. But most importantly, we are known as a very disciplined value investor. And in China, as you know, the market tend to be driven by short-term sentiment because of the large retail investor base. But this is exactly an opportunity to us, because as a long-term value investors, you know, in a volatile market, we can always pick up long-term value opportunities. And as a result, we've built a very strong performance track record in China. And that explains the reason why last year our business grew by almost 30%, mainly because domestic investors realized that they really needed to hire a quality manager in difficult markets like last year. And also on top of that, the Chinese government has been clamping down on shadow banking and now mandating that wealth management product must be managed by qualified managers. And that, in the long run, also is another opportunity for quality managers like Value Partners. I hope we have addressed your questions, Lucy.
Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have a breakdown in terms of different products for now, or the strategy focus in the future?
Yeah, sure. Actually, right now, as King mentioned, we have not yet actually kickstarted the marketing of our MLF, but that will happen very soon. So currently, there is no AUM from the MLF side. And then for the private funds that we mentioned, the first one will be launched in the next month or so. So right now, the majority of the AUM actually comes from our PFM license that King just shared.
Yeah, yeah. As I see mentioned, the private equity fund is in the process of having the first close. So, mm-hmm. So the AUM that we reported does not include that.
Mm-hmm.
see. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. And the next question is from Scott Russell from Macquarie's Hong Kong. And Scott, please go ahead.
Yeah, good evening all. I had a couple of questions, please. Both of them are I guess, almost board related. The first is on the dividend, and I guess I sit back and look at Value Partners in a difficult 2018 and observe that the business operationally is very pro-cyclical, whether it's funds flows or performance fees. But one way you can insulate shareholders against that is perhaps through the dividend and a progressive approach to lifting or maintaining a steady dividend. But then we look at slide 8 and you can see that actually the payout ratio is also pro-cyclical, and the 6 cents that's been declared for 2018 represents a quite a low payout ratio relative to the last decade. I always thought the payout ratio policy was something like 50% of adjusted earnings. Can you just update us on how the 6 cents was determined and what we should be thinking about for payout policy in future?
Hi, Scott. Thanks for your questions. You are right. Actually, the management will take into consideration a number of factors in proposing the dividends to shareholders, like example of our financial performance, market conditions, the amount of cash that we have on our balance sheet, and the funding needs of our growing business in order to come up with a dividend payout. So as you also know, this year we start with a year at a very volatile conditions, but we, the management also consider there are actually right now a lot of high growth investment opportunities that is available to us. So that's why we would opt to have a more conservative dividend payout proposed for 2018. So we are proposing a 34% of payout compared to in the previous past year, our dividend payout is about 40%. But then, of course, in a good year, when we have material cash surplus, such as in 2017, then we will tend to have a higher payout giving back the idle cash to our shareholders. So going forward, again, we'll consider the number of factors that I just mentioned. So as we indicated earlier, our target payout ratio would be roughly about 40%.
Okay, thanks, Icy.
Thank you, Scott.
The other question I was going to raise was actually around the news of the co-chairman and Mr. So's responsibilities going forward. I'm not sure if he's on the phone on the line and wants to make any comments about Value Partners' outlook, opportunity, or challenges. I completely understand if he's not. But if you could just clarify, perhaps otherwise, whether or not there's any operational change to either his role, and if there is, I suppose the role of others, whether there are promotions within the investment team or any potential disruption as a result of the reallocation. Thank you.
Thank you, Scott, for the question. First of all, this. As we highlighted earlier, is part of a succession planning process because this has gone back to 2012 when Louis was first appointed as deputy chairman. And he has been taking a very active role in managing our portfolio management functions jointly with Mr. Chair. Going forward, as our firm expands and transforms from a leading regional player into a world-class asset management group, there will be a lot more opportunities and challenges for the senior management team to look at. And that's why, you know, we have this co-chairman arrangement. Louis will be more engaged in the daily operation of the group going forward, while Mr. Che will focus more on strategic matters. Mr. Che will also be responsible for the appointments of all the key staff and the overall positioning of the firm as a financial services platform.
All right, I've got it. Thanks very much, all. Cheers.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes today's conference. Thank you for your participation.